It was a half-Oriental manner, inherited from the Moguls, intended to overawe the Indigenes and perhaps give the company's officials a proper sense of their own authority. Miss Eden, who had been in India for 2 years and was accustomed to different styles of consequence, found it faintly comic. Her letters show no awareness of majesty. The Governor-General is, after all, only her diffident brother George, pining for a decent inn. His grand officials, advisers, and aides are only upper-middle-class Englishmen accompanied by gossipy wives, squirmy children, and ludicrously cosseted pets. Miss Eden is not moved by the power or the responsibility or even the historical continuity represented by their progress. She sees it, in fact, with the eyes of the 18th century. She was born in the old century, and her attitudes are Augustan, elegant, fastidious, entertained, urbane. But on October the 30th, 1837, she learnt beside the Ganges that the age was ended. The company, which was sailing upriver by barge and steamer, put ashore for the night in pleasant hilly country some 200 miles north of Calcutta. They looked at some convenient ruins in the evening, very picturesque, Emily thought, gave the spaniel Chance a run, did a little sketching and received letters from England. These had come by the steamer Madagascar, which had left London on her maiden voyage just 3 months before. Emily read the letters with delight. She noted her sister's change of address. I did not know that there was such a place. And she noted also the accession to the throne of England of Princess Alexandrina Victoria of Kent. Drina, to her childhood intimates, 18 years old and rather plump. So she discovered beside the Holy River one of history's allegorical events. The world would never be the same again, and in particular Great Britain, whose lethargic plenipotentiary in those parts was her brother George, would acquire a new character. Before Victoria died, a very different kind of empire would acknowledge her sovereignty, a brazen, plumed, arrogant, and self-righteous empire, ruling its immense possessions not merely by display of force, but with an obsessive conviction of destiny and duty. England in 1837 was a country only half aware of its luck. The British stood at the threshold of a colossal boom, for they possessed a virtual monopoly of the techniques of steam, which was presently to prove itself the basic energy of the age. At the same time, they had emerged victorious and aglow from the unexampled struggle of the Napoleonic Wars to stand alone among the powers of Europe. Nelson and Wellington were international heroes, the one nobly dead in his catafalque in St. Paul's, the other...